Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Q1 interim statement of GFT Technologies SE. I know there's a lot going on today, so let's jump into the presentation immediately, and be efficient about it. Look at slide number two. We have seen dynamic growth in the first quarter. Revenue and earnings outlook was increased. I'll come back to that a bit later. We see very strong demand for digital transformation from all client segments. We have additional scaling from diversification, and on top, we do active price and cost management. Employee growth is keeping pace, a bit slower with revenue, and liquidity remains high. On the right side, performance, in the first quarter, we saw revenue up 40%, EBT up, and all profitability levels up quite heavily, 91% on EBT. We see our two sectors, insurance and industry and others, growing faster than the average group growth and a strong increase in employees. In the bottom left, we have updated our outlook for the full year, but I'll come back to that on the last slide. Let's go to slide number three, which is our key figures at one glance. As I said, revenue was up 40% to 173 million euros. We see our order backlog improved by nearly 60% versus previous year's KPI, which shows. Let's not forget, right? A year ago, I think everybody was still only half vaccinated, if at all. It was a different situation, and life was more risky. Clients were not ready to fully give full and big projects to GFT or other vendors. Now it's different. Everybody is pretty eager to perform the digital transformation they are planning, and they have all handed out the order backlog higher than before. Therefore, 60% increase is not surprising to us. It reflects the better quality of today. Nevertheless, we can only achieve the revenue growth we're guiding at the latest slide. EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA are the same numbers in Q1 because we have no M&A effects between the two. The last earn-out was paid in Q4 of last year, and therefore the two EBITDAs are identical. On the right side, you see that the EBITDA adjusted and the EBITDA includes normal utilization levels. We also include quite normal restructuring levels for GFT, roughly 900,000 euros in the first quarter. It was pretty much the same number in the year before, and we had a positive FX effect as a surprise and as a change to last year, where we had a small minus. Looking at EBIT and EBT, we see strong increase on that level because we have cost efficiencies, as we will later see on the depreciation line. Earnings per share are up 86%. Let's move forward, slide number four, and look at diversification. The left side of the slide shows our client portfolio. As we can see, our biggest client, whom in the past we did report on pretty intensely, we've reduced that with the current year. Everybody knows it's Deutsche Bank, and Deutsche Bank stood for 13% of our revenue in the first quarter. The clients overall, we're pleased with the diversification, right? We have a strong funnel, although it is not fully keeping up with the pace we're showing on group level when it comes to growth. Therefore, the client groups smaller than 1 million are declining a bit, but still okay, while the client groups above 5 million are striving. We see that our clients are referring to vendors they know for their major digitization programs. GFT is very well-positioned, and this leads to our clients bigger than 10 million euros growing to 44% of our overall revenue. A year ago, 34%. For the full last year, it was already 37%, and now it's 44%. On the right side, we see our sector growth. The banking division has grown by 31%. It still represents 70% of GFT's total business. We see insurance growing by 67%, very strong, now representing 17%. Also industrial clients and other clients have grown by nearly 60%, which now stands for 13% of group sales. Moving forward, slide number five, which is the view of the quarters. We do see that, versus the last quarter, Q4 of last year, we see growth of 8%. Usually, as we could see and as we know, Q4 is one of our strongest quarters of the year. Q1 was very strong. There was one impact. March was a tremendously long month with no holidays. This was beneficial for the first quarter of this year. We ended at 173, which is a growth of 40% versus last year. The profitability level is a bit below Q4, but that is normal as well, as a lot of fixed price projects end in Q4, which usually boosts the profitability somewhat, and in the Q1, it often goes down a bit. Let's move forward. Slide number six, revenue by segments. Here we show where the growth is really coming from, and we do see that Americas, U.K., and APAC is leading the GFT growth. We see 60% organic growth, and this is happening especially in, now I'm nearly listing all countries in this segment because it's Canada, it's Brazil, it's Hong Kong, it's Singapore, it's U.K., and the U.S. So only Mexico was missing of the countries where we work in that region. Something new, we have a positive FX effect. We didn't have that in quite a while. So this together boosts the growth to 68% on euro level. Euro has weakened versus all our other currencies, and therefore local revenues in local currency growth is not as strong as in euro. Therefore, we have a positive 8% increase coming from purely FX in Americas, U.K., and APAC. Looking at continental Europe, well, of course, there's no FX effect to start with that because it's mainly euro-based. We see 10% organic growth, which is mainly coming from Germany, Spain, and Switzerland. Let's move forward. Earnings per segment. Slide number seven. Here we do see that both segments have increased profitability, but there's a bit of specialty inside. On the Americas, U.K., and APAC side, we do see stable EBT margin despite increased sales and business development investments, which are mainly burdening on the EBITDA level. On the EBT, we also benefit from the now missing M&A effects. On EBITDA level, the margin has reduced a bit, mainly because it's early in the year. Not all price increases are in yet, and as stated, sales and business development costs are high for sustainable growth. Looking at continental Europe, we see a very strong increase in profitability, which is a bit special and limited to Q1. Our internal transfer prices, and I usually refer at this moment that you as investors and analysts have a hard time interpreting profitability of our business segments, and therefore you should focus on GFT Group. But let me explain today a bit. Continental Europe includes Poland and Spain, which are nearshore centers to the segment Americas, U.K., and APAC. So part of the profit happens in continental Europe if there is growth in the Americas, U.K., and APAC region. Our transfer prices internally, which have to follow OECD standards for tax reasons, they increase 1st of January. So the colleagues in the U.K. pay higher prices for our internal Polish resources since January 1st. Salary increases in Poland and Spain will happen 1st of April. So you see there is a time gap in which these countries, they turn a profit because of this mechanism internally. We are increasing prices for internal rates. This will bottom out in the second quarter, and for the full year, you will not see it anymore. Therefore, it is a one-time effect in Q1, and margin of continental Europe will reduce slightly in the coming quarters and go back to normal. Again, the reason is a time gap between internal transfer price increases and external salary increases. Okay, that said, maybe we should go back to focusing on GFT Group profitability overall. Smile. Let's go to slide number eight, revenues by markets. What we do see here is, well, nearly all markets are growing. There's only one minus in the list, which is in France, where we are working for one client. That project is reducing in size, and therefore we're currently reducing revenues. Scale-up of new clients is taking somewhat longer, so this will not change throughout 2022. Other markets, U.K. and Brazil, are our top one and two, pretty close together by now, are growing very strongly. Brazil on euro basis, even more than 100%. We see Canada up 58%, U.S. up 34%, Switzerland 54%. Very strong growth rates, which in the end bring us to the plus 40% on group level you have seen. We're very happy with the distribution you see in the cake on the left side because we are diversifying risk across many countries these days. Which brings me to slide number nine, our biggest clients in the first quarters, and the one that have not been on this list of top 30 in the first quarter last year, they show a box around them. So we do see with the box the Admiral Group, an insurance company from the U.K. We see Al Rajhi Bank, which is a bank from the Arabias, whom we built a digital bank for in Malaysia, BNEBA, and BTG Pactual from Canada, and Credit Suisse. There are two not disclosed names. One is a private equity company from the U.S., and one is an Italian insurance company who are not allowing us to use their names and logos. Let's move forward. Income statement, slide number 10. Not much to go deep about. Revenues, of course, up 40%. Just to comment on operating income. Main driver here is that we had more FX effects, who are partially shown in operating income and partially shown in operating expenses. So both are higher in volume because of those effects. The saldo is the 200K profit we showed on the slide number 3. Cost of purchase services up 72%. So we are using more freelancers and external resources in Q1 than we did last year, which shows that hiring people is truly a challenge at the moment. Personnel expenses, therefore, only up 31%, slower than revenue growth, of course, overcompensated by purchase services. The fourth bullet point on the right indicates the ratio of combining all purchase services and all personnel expenses versus revenue. And this ratio stood at 83% last year, and we were able to reduce it to 81%, cost for people versus revenue. As I said, salary increases will mainly kick in April, so this ratio will go up a bit in the second quarter. Other operating expenses up 80%. This shows we have strong investments in recruiting and business development, so it is above revenue right now. We think it will normalize again, but the first quarter showed strong investments here. I was already referring to the depreciation cost, which, as you can see, are down by 8%, and this on the back of 40% revenue growth. This means we're not utilizing more expensive IT infrastructure to deliver the revenue, and we're not using more office space because the office space is part of depreciation via the IFRS 16 rules. So highly scalable business at GFT at the moment. And last but not least, also amortization has been reducing, leading to depreciation and amortization heavily contributing to the improved EBIT and EBT. Tax rate, one comment on that, it was 29% in the first quarter. We are looking at 28% roughly for the full year. This brings me to slide number 11, cash flow analysis. Well, in a nutshell, net cash is still positive. That is the number on the graph on the very right, 4.10 million euros. We started the quarter on the very left at 1.93 million euros. Operating cash flow, which you see at plus 3.6 million, was significantly below last year's number. We obviously have a shift of when cash flows come in, and there are a couple of effects which I want to mention. First of all, 2021 was a very good year. We had very strong bonus payouts in March, far higher than a year ago, and therefore cash flow-wise, March was expensive because of variable pay. We had growing revenues, which shows we have an increasing working capital, and we didn't have the ideal working capital position at the 31st of March. So this will turn around, as always. Last year, Q1 was very good. This year, we will see Q2 and the later quarters benefiting. Nevertheless, JFT is highly cash generating. It's sometimes a matter of cutoff date when we are able to show it to the investors. Therefore, operating cash flow improving over the quarters to come. Cash flow from financing activities was simply payback of loans because of our strong cash position. Cash flow from investing activities, this is purely hardware, office equipment that we're buying. We didn't buy any company in this time period, therefore limited number, as already stated, leads to limited depreciation and a bit of FX effects, which overall leads to an unchanged strong net cash position. Sometimes we're asked, you're looking at M&A. Yes, we are looking at M&A, and we have firepower because we're not using our credit facilities at the moment as we could. Let's move forward. Slide number 12. This is a quick one. The balance sheet, the total balance sheet did not change much versus year end. And there's not really any major impact. Maybe just to mention that our non-current assets, which includes our office space IFRS 16 accounting, has increased a bit because we had to roll over some of our lease contracts in Madrid and London. So they moved from a one-year duration back to a longer duration of 4 to 5 years. And this is always an impact. on the IFRS 16 number. But that's it. Nothing really complex about the balance sheet at the moment, which would bring me to slide number 13, GFT employees. Growth in the first quarter, I mentioned it before, it was 30%, coming from a lot of countries, but mainly Brazil. We're now more than 8,000 employees, 8,120 to be precise. Utilization remained on a high level while still onboarding a lot of people. And on the right side, the attrition also remained on a high level, but it didn't touch the 20 yet. I think in the call early March, we said that we want to keep it below 20. We're afraid it will be between 20 and 22% people we lose, but whom we have to rehire immediately. That's attrition. But it's stuck at 19.4% in the first quarter. Let's see where it goes in the second. And the last bullet point, the number of contractors is, of course, in line with the increased purchases, is now 1,300 people. It was 830 a year ago. And this brings me to my last slide, the outlook for 2022. We do see sustained growth. We see increased EBT margin versus previous year. Our guidance is changing. We had a guidance on the revenue side of 680 so far. We're increasing that to 720 million euros, which would be an increase on the revenue full year, 27%. EBITDA adjusted and EBITDA are both predicted at 79 million euros now. Initial guidance was 75.5. And on the EBT level, we're moving from 55.5 million old guidance to 58 million euros new guidance. We're seeing strong demand, and this is mainly driving the EBT and the profitability. We are scaling up costs in parallel because we do see the trend for longer term digitization projects going on into 23, which means we have to invest in sales and business development to sustain this growth for the years to come. But this was fun reporting the Q1 numbers, as I had predicted last year. We should have a couple of good quarters. Please do not expect guidance increases similar to last year. I think with 720, we kind of hit what we're able to recruit from the market in 22. Maybe we prove ourselves wrong and there's a bit of upside to it. But in the end, what limits us is not the business side, it is the capacity side of things, getting people. I'm sometimes asked, how's the Ukraine working and the war working for GFT? It's two-sided. On the one hand side, we see clients addressing us if we could help them replace people who are, they are no longer using in Belarus or Russia, or capacities now missing in Ukraine. We can't help much because our organic growth is that strong that we're not really waiting for that additional demand. That's kind of a positive signal. The negative signal is that, of course, peers and competitors are now looking into the middle of Eastern Europe for hiring, moving out of Belarus and Ukraine somewhat. So there's a bit more hiring pressure, especially in the Polish market. So it goes in both directions. What is important for us Europeans, and I'm part of that, is that we have a very close view on the Ukraine war. When we look at our numbers from America's UK APAC, there the situation is somewhat different. The war is farther away, not only locally, also in the thinking and the behavior of the clients. And we see that the growth rates there are simply intact. While in Europe, there's a bit of insecurity about the war and what it will mean on the other side of the Atlantic, we see far more optimism when it comes to the future at the moment. Therefore, we do see those growth rates as sustainable, and they should lead into 23. So that's maybe a bias we Europeans have on the global market. It's not that European when you live on the Americas side, and that is what GFT is currently benefiting from, which is driving our growth rates. Well, enough questions answered who have not been asked yet, and let's go to the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Please note, questions can only be asked via telephone and not via webcast. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please leave the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question is from Knud Hinkel of Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Lutz. Thank you for having my questions. I have, I think, three or four. First one on your renewed guidance, the EBITDA margin. It seems that it's pretty much in line with the foreseen increase of revenue, so the margin remains the same. As I think that the additional growth that you're seeing now does not come from Deutsche Bank, it means that the margin of the additional business is higher than what you've seen before. Is that a correct observation in your view? And can you confirm that? That would be my first question. Second question on your recruiting efforts that have been very successful in Brazil, as far as I understand. Maybe you can say something why you focused your hiring efforts on that reason that much, and how come that we were very successful in that regard. Third question, business with the top two clients, as we called it earlier, or Deutsche Bank. You said something how the business developed in the first quarter. It's very nice from an analyst point of view. Could you say something also, or maybe on your outlook for the full year 2022? And the last question, some housekeeping. You said underutilization is at normal levels. So my reading is that, so any burdens from that is you are at zero and you are believed to stay at that level during the full year. Maybe you can say something on the outlook for restructuring expenses for the full year. That would be helpful. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, good morning. Lots of questions. Let's combine the one and three, which is top two clients, Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank revenues in the first quarter were pretty much exactly the same number as in the year before. The percentage changed, right? It reduced to 13%, but the nominal number was pretty much unchanged. We do see this go down somewhat over the year. I think we've been mentioning that there is a transition going on in Spain, away from us, going to the Deutsche Bank internal Asia hub, the Indian hub. So we will over time, we believe we will see a reduction in Spain, but we do see growth in Germany and the UK and probably the US as well. So there will be a saldo of small negative decline, but overall absolutely manageable. The margins of Deutsche are intact, and therefore our margin not changing overall also means that overall our margins are intact and are not moving heavily. It's more depending on long-lasting business on under MSAs, where it's a bit harder to increase prices, while in new projects, contracts, it's easier to increase prices. And this is what drives our margin. It's not Deutsche Bank. It doesn't really influence it because the margins in all other business are just as good. Recruiting, why focus on Brazil? Well, we don't focus on Brazil. We focus on demand. Where we do see demand, where we're able to position our offering, we will then search for people. In Brazil, we have a very, very strong HR department, and we have a way of going to the market, recruiting people that is very efficient and successful. And I think we have by now a pretty strong brand. We are one of the top three players in Brazil, and therefore it is easier to find people there than maybe in some of our other markets because we have gained a lot of traction. But it is not we want to grow people in Brazil and then search for demand. It goes the other way around. We see the demand and then we follow up with people. And that's why Brazil is thriving. But other markets are growing as well. So when you see 60% growth in Canada, for sure there's also people growth behind that. When we see 50% growth in the UK and a lot in Asia, there's a lot of growth coming from our new Vietnam office, where we are growing to nearly 200 people now, getting very efficient, and to the Polish organization. So it's across the board. It's not only Brazil, but the Brazilian numbers are simply outstanding. Utilization, yes, no burden for the year. Of course not. It will be a good year on utilization numbers. Restructuring for the full year, I think we budgeted at 2.5 million euros. So we've spent a bit more in the first quarter than one fourth. but we should be able to stay within the 900K. And that is indeed, it doesn't sound nice, right? But that is a housekeeping number. We need those two and a half million just for normal restructurings that happen in an 8,000 people organization. Hope that helped.
Yes, thanks a lot.
The next question is from Andreas Wolf of Warburg. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. Congratulations on the strong start to the year. My question would be the following. So what is the impact of an additional point in attrition on profitability, on margin levels? I don't know if it's possible to calculate it or name a number. Maybe you could nevertheless shed some light on the relation here. Regarding the strong top-line development, do you see a change or a shift in the projects that clients are asking for? Have those changed compared to the pandemic or pre-pandemic situation? Clients emphasizing different or other areas of their digitalization? And then on pricing, in one of the remarks in the presentation, you kind of allude to improved pricing, if I interpreted this correctly. If that is right, how shall we think about price increases? Are you, or do you have to actively go to clients and carry out negotiations? Or is this basically an effect coming from, let's say, tenders where you can win a tender at higher assumed daily rates and other clients are then dropping out of the client list as they are not willing to pay higher prices? How shall we think of this procedure? And then that's my last question, the impact of FX on profitability. Does it move approximately in line with the impact on top line, or is the impact on profitability more pronounced? Thank you.
All right. Wow, that's a list. Good morning. Impact of 1% additional attrition on the margin would be minimal. Simply, it would have an impact on our revenues. So if we don't get the people, or in other words, we lose more people and we can't all rehire, in the first step, it would reduce the potential for our revenue. It doesn't immediately hit the margin, only if the numbers would go really, really high. So we're not talking 1% additional, but 10%. That's when we would be talking about margin. But if we would have 22% attrition, it might hinder us to get the next 5 million because we're not getting the people. And then on the margin side, the margin does not change. We simply don't get the revenue and the attached gross margin. On the top line, shift in projects, technology size, yes, there is a shift between today and a year ago. A year ago, as I said, banks were behaving somewhat more cautious. Well, 2 years ago, they were behaving far more cautious. Last year, more cautious. What we now see is the willingness to invest into relevant, longer-term programs. This was not the case a year ago. And this is what changed throughout 21 and what we're benefiting from in the end in our order book that you see. Clients are doing digital transformation changes to major extent, be it in Brazil, major banks going for the cloud, being in the US, major banks having a multi-year cloud strategy or a replatforming strategy for their core banking. And they are ready to dig deep into this and not just hand out small projects. And that's why we believe that this part of the market, this is ongoing. This won't change easily. There's big business cases behind, and this is optimism not only for 22, but for the years to come. And therefore, technology, yes, is shifting. Cloud is still king, and we do see those transformational software packages that we are working on from Mambu or Thought Machine taking more and more room with our end clients and with big end clients, not with small banks, with major banks. So there's probably going to be a lot of news about these companies in the next 24 months. Pricing? How does pricing change? Of course, it's exactly as you said. It is both. In existing clients, in existing M&As, in existing programs, it is negotiations with the end client. The client, he's not market agnostic. He knows IT costs are increasing in his own company, just like in ours. Of course, they don't like us coming for price increases, but they understand, and there is some acceptance. We have to be creative on how we sell it, as always. That's part of the sales job description, to also show the upside of our increased prices. Maybe we're able to reduce the pyramid levels, use more juniors than seniors, and then we get to price increases in the end. It is, of course, a bit easier when we go for tenders, new projects in new technologies, be it in existing clients or in new clients, because then it's more a greenfield approach to pricing, while in a long-lasting client relationship, it's a bit brownfield, grayfield, and you have a harder time negotiating prices. So it is blurred. It's a mix of everything. And overall, we are, that's what we currently see for the year, able to compensate the strong salary increases of the year, which we are experiencing, with the price increases we're generating. And yes, this sometimes means we have to say no to projects and sometimes also to long-lasting clients if they are absolutely not willing to be part of a price increase. And your last question, impact of FX. Yeah, it goes in every direction. There's a bit of a positive impact coming from the real to euro ratio because Brazil is so big today. So the pure recalculation of Brazilian real profits to euros has an impact. At the same time, our sales in the US has a harder time using Brazilian resources, which is not to a very big extent of the Brazilian workforce, but it is a relevant margin contributor. If the real gets more expensive, our profits in the UK reduce somewhat. So there is a bit uplift on the profitability coming from FX, but I think overall it is not major. And knowing the real, especially the real, we know how volatile it is. Let's see where it's moving in the coming quarters. I hope that helped.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome. More questions.
The next question is from Wolfgang Specht of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, good morning. Congrats from my side as well for the excellent reporting. Three or four additions from one side. First, the utilization rate at 90%. Is that basically a function of some people still being or new people being in training and thus cannot be charged in customer projects yet? Or where's the delta to, let's say, 100 coming from mostly? Then on the churn figures, can we assume that you have significantly higher churn in the nearshoring locations than at your, let's say, traditional consulting and salespeople in the western part of your organization? Third question would be on your external contractors. Let's say, is it a number or a ratio to your overall workforce that is suitable, or would you be definitely interested to raise the number of permanent workers, or could it be an advantage to have some flexibility here and keep that share of external consultants? Last question is on your industries. We saw a sharp increase in industry and others. Is there already, let's say, kind of sub-sector approaching that could be, let's say, reach critical mass to kind of spin it off and steer it individually, like you're doing with banking and insurance?
Thank you very much. Good morning, first of all. Yes, utilization rate, you're right, 10% are missing. I always ask for those 10%, right? That's my role. It is more than training, right? Part of it is purely onboarding. You have people who join the company. They can't go to a billable project on day one. There is a time lag, depending on the market, of 1 week to sometimes you have to put them to training, maybe even certification, 8 weeks. So if you have a 20% attrition and you grow, you have a lot of new joiners, and they are a relevant part of the utilization, 10% missing. The second is, as you said, it is training. And last but not least, also important for GFT is our tech people are used for sales. So when we do pitches, when we go to clients, we need the expertise from our professional service units brought to the sales teams. And this is also eating into those 10%. For sure, 3% of that is pure sales support. And therefore, that is the main reasons for the 10% gap. on the churn, you're right. Nearshore is usually a bit higher. That's what we see. Our Polish, our Brazilian numbers are a bit higher above. What we do see across the board is all countries, traditional or nearshore countries, are above previous year average. So we see a pickup everywhere. And in Germany, the pickup is a bit smaller, or in Spain. And you're right, the traditional markets have a smaller attrition or churn in people, and the Polish, the Brazilian markets, where a salary increase maybe makes a bigger difference for the individual. We see a bit a higher number. But across the board, churn has gone up, percentage-wise, pretty much the same in all countries. Contractors. Contractors have two specialties in GFT. One is we use them, as you say correctly, for capacity. And sometimes you simply can't hire fast enough, so you bring on board capacity. And at some point, this hurts, because bringing people in as employees might be more cost efficient. That's part number one. And then there's Poland. In our Polish organization, and it's a bit the same all over Eastern Europe, people have the choice. They join us as contractors or as employees. Contractors has some social security benefits. So in times like these, when the markets are on the employee side, it's an employee market at the moment, they like to choose the contractor position. The work contract is not so important. And when times are tough, they come back as they try to be employees again. So we have this shifting. And for us, cost base wise, and how people are treated by GFT, how they treat us, is the same if they are a freelancer or if they are an employee. So we have to carve out Poland from the equation, but for all the other markets, it's mainly a resource play, sometimes a longer-term resource play. And in some markets, sometimes it is a bit of overshooting. Maybe Q1 was showing that, and we want to return to employees, but the market currently is not really made for that. So it might take a bit of time, maybe only in 23. Last question, industry. Industry and others, we call it, and it is quite diverse. As I said, we have credit card, healthcare companies in there, but also manufacturing, which we address with our storyline that we have a product made in Germany and used across the board. We work very closely with some of the hyperscalers and with industrial clients, with car manufacturers, car part manufacturers. So the growth there is twofold. Partially, it is around producing industries, and partially it's around all other industries, and therefore it's a bit too early to say, hey, it's been fully successful, it's going as planned. At least we do see good growth rates. That's where we want to be, across the board, in others and in industrial clients. So from Q1 perspective, it's going the right direction. Let's revisit throughout the year. I think it's still a story to be explained.
Okay, thanks a lot, very helpful.
You're welcome. And do we have more questions?
The next question is from Sven Sauer of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. Only two questions left. The first one is, you mentioned that, and also in the press release, that the duration of your contracts is increasing now. And I was wondering, do you also see a shift in the type of the projects or pricing? For example, more T&M or more fixed price projects, especially in light that GFT was able to adjust for inflation due to the short-term contracts that they previously had. And the second question is, if you could give an update on the digital bank project. I think it's in Malaysia.
Yeah, correct. Happy to do so. Good morning, Azar. Duration of contracts increasing. Well, no. Funny enough, the duration of what we have signed as contract is increasing somewhat. Yes, it is. What is far more important is the duration of those programs the clients are starting is increasing, which means they are allocating relevant budgets to programs, which then they hand out in contract periods, which are not changing much from the past. Let me go. I'll come back to that in a second. But I think I mentioned it before, but the programs they're running now, and my example is a cloudification program or a replatforming program of your core banking for a new technology. This is a multi-million, in big banks, triple million numbers. project. And if they decide to go for this, if they agree the business case is the right business case to follow, it's something that they will follow up on over time. And we see that across the board. That's the big change after COVID, that the banks are back to heavily digitizing their infrastructure. Same goes for insurance companies. So the programs are increasing. Now, what does it mean for GFT? First of all, it doesn't mean they change the approach. Often these approaches are agile, and agile means projects are compartmentalized. They're put into pieces that are manageable and then often handed out as TMN or fixed price projects lasting 6, 8, 12 weeks. And me as CFO, I love it because project risks are easily manageable in these time periods. A 5-year contract is far more complex to manage. And therefore, the way they are moving, the programs are getting longer durations. The contracts a bit, yes, that's good. But it is the programs that really drive the story. Of course, we are aware that this current inflation on our pricing, especially on salaries, might not end in 22. So we are eager to be flexible on pricing. So we don't want very long fixed price projects out there. And if we have them, we put inflation adjustments in for sure. The current demand on T&M and fixed price has not changed much. It's pretty much the same ratio. Some clients prefer T&M, some prefer fixed price. It's in the end the client's choice how we do it. We like both, and we like the upside of fixed price projects a lot because I think we're quite good at then delivering in line with the potential upside. But again, the client decides the contract type. I hope that answers the contract, especially the program topic, if it's increasing in duration. Digital bank in Malaysia, yep. I think it has now gone live for family and friends. The Al Rajhi Bank has gained one of those digital banking licenses in Malaysia, and these digital banking licenses are handed out all over Asia these days. Digital banking license means you may be a bank, but you may not have a front end. You may not have a physical office, only digital. That's why it's called the digital banking license. And these banks usually try to be very efficient about their cost base and very scalable. And therefore, in this case, they use Thought Machine as scalable back-end, core banking back-end, and we built the bank. And it went live in 6 months, a duration we have never achieved with Thought Machine so far. Very, very fast, very efficient, and it's now in testing phase. So it is now first delivered and in testing phase, because that was your question, what is the status? It has not gone live yet to the public market, but this will come soon. And we're optimistic that on this platform we've generated, which we can manage with Thought Machine technology, but also with the Mambu technology, when needed and as decided by the client, we will win more digital banks across Asia over time, because our toolbox is ready to go and to be repeated.
Perfect.
Hope that answered the questions.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Knud Hinkel of Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Sabrina. One follow-up, maybe a more general question. The overall profit pool for IT service in the banking sector. So a banking sector has been under pressure in the last couple of years, not only because of low interest rates, but also because of increasing competition, fintechs and so on, especially in Germany. It's probably also a significant market for you. Now that interest rates go up again, do you expect the I would expect that the banking sector should do better in the next couple of years from that. Do you also expect then the profit pool for IT service companies to grow from that? I know that it's more about technological changes, but it's maybe also a side effect from that coming. Do you see that?
Well, that's a lesson learned from the past. Banks who earn good money more easily spend higher IT budgets than banks that have a profit problem. And with Deutsche, we've suffered through a ramp down, as you all know, over some years. Therefore, the fundamental assumption is right. A bank earning money is good for IT service companies. And the profit pool in Europe, I fully agree, was probably a lot under pressure over the last years. It's been different on the other side of the Atlantic, looking at the American banks. their profit pool has been far better, and they are spending, right? It's similar in Brazil. When you look at some of the European banks that are also working with the Brazil or Mexican subsidiary, and you look where the profits come from when they report, the Brazilian side, the South American side is usually heavily contributing to their profits. So they have a bigger profit pool already. Now, as a portfolio of companies like GFT is, with markets in Europe and the Americas, over the last 20 years, we always had shifting demand cycles. And currently, it is the Americas, North, South, and Asia cycle in our benefit. We believe the Europeans will come back, yes. If the increasing interest rates and hopefully improved cost-income ratios of European banks shows in their profitability over the next years, we see them turning up higher profits, and this hopefully leads to then higher spendings on the IT side again. That's why we have this balanced portfolio. We never have everybody growing at the same time. Maybe the America side will slow down somewhere in future. We will learn, but we believe the Europeans have a chance to come back. Maybe not in 22 yet, maybe it's 23, but we will see that happening, correct. So I agree to the assumptions.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Do we have more questions?
There are no further questions at this time. I hand back to Jochen Ruetz for closing comments.
So thank you very much. We will have Q2 numbers in August. As always, summertime. We will do the Q2 numbers always with more technological expertise. Marika Lulay will then again join me, so all the tech questions can be answered a bit more in depth, as we always do it. And in the Q1 and Q3, you have to live with my answers. I hope it worked for today. I all wish you a good day and talk. See you soon. Bye-bye.